105 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, guests, help you lead a more positively minded life. Lucky for me, I'm assisted by Lauren Sykes, Linda Vanella, here in the studio today, who helped me pull this whole thing together every day. Really nice. Hey, a man came in my office the other day and he told me that someone had said to him, was exactly what he said. He said, "Are you alone?" He said, a man who had just gotten a divorce. He said, "I'm alone, but that's better than wanting to be." I thought that's one of the most profound quotes that I've heard in a very long time. I'm alone, but that's better than wanting to be. Many of you could relate to that, I'm sure. Well, today I want to talk about something that's kind of like being alone. Today I want to talk about ignoring people and being ignored. Now, don't think that ignoring and being ignored is a bad thing. I'm not necessarily saying that. I just want to explore this issue because it touches a lot of people in a lot of different ways. If you think about being ignored, you know, as you get older in life and you get a little more feeble, people try to become more and more invisible. They want to become invisible because they don't want to become targets, like fish. You know, I think fish always like to be ignored. You know, unless you're looking for a mate fish at the moment, the rest of the time you want to be ignored. If you're a fish, there's always a fish bigger than you. You want to be, even if you're a shark, you want to be ignored because you want to stealthily creep up on your food, right? Rainbow fish, you think that they wouldn't like to be ignored. But of course, they're meant to blend into the coral so you wouldn't see them. Anchovies, I know a lot of people who are, what kind of fish would you be? You know, if you were a fish, what kind of fish would you be? Think about that. Anchovies. Now, anchovy, there's a fish for you. They definitely want to be ignored, but the way they stay alive is they gather together and they become invisible. Every anchovy looks like every other anchovy. You never have two anchovies looking different. By looking identical, there's a chance that you won't get grabbed. You know, you don't want to be like that one. If you're a wildebeest and you're the weak one who stands out, you don't want to be that because you become food. So everything in life is you pay attention to everything, and there's only one reason to be noticed, and that's for mating purposes. And the rest of the time in nature, it's safer to be ignored, right? So if you're a gorilla and you're the alpha gorilla and you're the alpha male, you want people to see you, but that's for mating purposes because you don't want anybody else coming in on your turf. Rest of the time, it really pays to be ignored. What about Siamese fighting fish? Well, we're talking about fish. Siamese fighting fish, these are these little fish we used to have as kids. And if you put a mirror and you hold a mirror up to a Siamese fighting fish, it fans itself out and starts fighting with the mirror. It starts fighting with the fish that's in the mirror. It kind of really, I challenge you. I see you, oh big mighty Siamese fish. I'm going to challenge you. And you're fighting with it. A lot of people I know do that. A lot of people I know are like Siamese fighting fish. They fight with themselves all the time. They have dialogues in their heads back and forth. You know, you, and you talk to yourself that way. It's like a fish. So basically the idea here is to not get noticed. Whales don't care. You get to a point where you're so big, it just doesn't matter if you're noticed or not. But that's not same. That may be true for the whale, but, you know, the guys with the harpoons, right? You don't know about them. You're not thinking about them because by the time you run into them, you're already in too much trouble. You've learned your lesson. So how do people ignore people? And why do people ignore people? Well, ignoring people is one way to be of the passive aggressive. The passive aggressive, the person who can't say, "I'm mad at you," they ignore you. If you say something that bothers them, they ignore you. In fact, they zone you out in their minds. They kind of throw a blanket over your very existence. They may even nod and smile, right? And say, yes, yes, whatever, you're sure, sure. But they don't even hear you. You're talking at a distance. So passive-aggressive people love to ignore people. And if you're somebody who's in a relationship with a passive-aggressive, you know what it's like to be ignored. Now, if you're sensitive to being ignored, that's a terrible thing to be with a passive-aggressive person, because you're going to pay your dues. So what kind of people don't get ignored? Well, people who don't get ignored, there are two types. There's the very pleasing, pretty type. They don't get ignored. Big smiles don't get ignored. You know, I have a friend who says every time you walk in the room, your smile lights up the room. That means you can't be ignored. You brighten up the room, means you turn on the lights. And or boisterous people don't get ignored. They walk in a room, they make a lot of noise. Then there are people who dress in a way as to never get ignored. They wear outrageous clothing. You know, they may wear a purple raincoat and just, you know, it's whatever it is. Just notice me, meaning don't ignore me. I'm here. I'm here. One of the ways that we develop this way of dealing with the world, of wanting to be noticed and not wanting to be noticed at the same time. If you're a young girl, well, this, I was talking to Linda about this earlier. Linda, you were saying something about young girls at pubescence.
Yes, Armand. I've counseled many a woman who have shared with me that at the time of pubescence, when they started to develop sexually, the attention that they immediately won from both males and females kind of offered them a feeling of challenge, of shame, oftentimes embarrassment. And it really started there, where they would begin to avoid other people. They found themselves shying away from their peers, preferring some isolated activity rather than socializing. And this carried through with them, and they could go back to that time and recall it.
You know, it's kind of surprising of me to hear that, because I would imagine, when I remember as a kid, the girls who had developed breasts got a lot of attention. From the guys and from the other girls as well. And I would think that that would be favorable, you know, to getting that attention.
Not all the time, Armand. Oftentimes that very attention is what really prompted them to really feel very much ashamed of themselves and not be able to understand. Oftentimes would be maybe jealousy from other girls or very harmless attention from other boys, but yet they would internalize that. And maybe times, because of their culture or because of their background, they would oftentimes feel a lot of shame and feeling like they're just, you know, not really feeling comfortable right within their own skin.
Wow. So there, if you mature a little too early as a woman, you will develop some kind of a shyness, or may develop some kind of a shyness that would make you move away and not want to be seen. Not want to be seen as opposed to being seen. You know, I think men are always trying to get noticed, as I noticed in men. You know, they're going to get the bigger car, or they're going to get the bigger this, or the bigger that. It's like, notice me, but it almost seems to always be about mating. It's about the mating ritual. It's about being higher on the pole, you know, so that people will notice you. But one of the things that children do to get noticed is they attach themselves to a parent of the opposite sex. Whenever you hear about a daddy's little girl or a mommy's little boy, you're going to hear about a passive-aggressive person. How could we be saying that? Daddy's little girl means I am a little girl who loves my daddy and my daddy loves me, and we have a special relationship, and it's very quiet, and I won't say anything to hurt daddy's feelings, and therefore I'm going to be very nice all the time, and I'm going to be a nice person. That's a daddy's little girl. They're nice, very nice. Meanwhile, that very daddy's little girl is getting resented by mommy. Mommy resents daddy's little girl, and mommy wants to, you know, feels jealous and angry. But daddy's little girl is aware of mommy's jealousy and anger, but ignores it. See, and this is where the ignoring begins. Now you can't pay attention to that, because if you pay attention to that, you'd have to let the whole thing in, and you may have to let go of daddy in some way. So you don't. So what the child does and what the parents do, what both parents collaborate on this as well, is they set up this kind of ritual where the child has got this relationship with dad, and mom is kind of resenting it, and the child is ignoring mom, and dad therefore not resents, but he ignores mom too, and her feelings. Now reverse that to mommy's little boy, and it's the same kind of thing. Mom's got a relationship with her son, and it's such a relationship with son that dad becomes angry. Dad becomes angry, but mom talks to her son about what a terrible man daddy is. So the son begins to ignore his father, and he won't pay attention to his father. You take that man and you grow him up, and you try to see what is it like for you to grow up as a man. He has no role model. He can only grow up and be like his mother, because he's had to reject dad, because they've learned to ignore the feelings of the resentful father. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Look at this, ignoring somebody, going all the way back to some early childhood roots. You know, I'd rather be a fish. There are times that people want to be ignored. And there are people who want to be ignored. Pickpockets. A pickpocket. What's your profession? I'm a pickpocket. I've never heard anybody say that. Right? What do you do for a living? I'm a pickpocket. That could probably be something from a play. Pickpockets, thieves, they want to be ignored. They don't want you to see them. Stealth becomes very important. You don't see me. Well, but then there's the other one. They're like birds in a nest. Now, birds, if you're a baby bird, you're going to have to make the most noise to get fed. You're going to have to be the most aggressive to get fed. So being ignored as a bird in a nest is not going to get you to do very well. It's very interesting that the word ignore, which means to lack of attention, is related to the word ignorance, which is lack of knowing, lack of knowledge. Ignore, ignorance. What about this one? What about if you're a woman and somebody is talking to you, and they get to a certain point, and then because you're a woman, let's say it's a man, he sees your friendliness as a possible opening, and therefore he becomes intentional with his, I don't want to say sexual attentions, but attachment attentions. You know, he decides he's going to move it to another level. What do you do? What do you do? You know, what do you do when that happens? When somebody who has been friendly goes towards you in a way that's not friendly, what do you do? How do you deal with it?
Well, it's an interesting place to be, because one, if the female ignores that overture, what's the message? And the other part is, how do they move it to the next level or not move it to the next level? So there's a decision that needs to be made at that point. So that interaction then changes, it switches. So one could either kind of laugh at it or make light of it, kind of bringing it to a different place, or in fact, take it in and either be combative or address it.
So you've got two choices. Mm-hmm. The passive aggressive way is to laugh. People who laugh at flirtations, passive-aggressive, good. The aggressive way is, hey, keep it in your pants, mister, right? Which is the other way. You know, they stop this. You know, you go to a physician, and the physician is supposed to be treating you. Suddenly, he's flirting with you. What's your idea? Your idea, you laugh at it. If you laugh at it, that means he does that with the next person, and he does it with the person after that, and the person after that. If some guy makes some obscene remark to you in passing, just thinking he's allowed to say it, you laugh. And you laugh, you're saying to him, you could do that just about any time you want because it's going to get you a favorable reaction. Or you could ignore him. You could freeze him out. Or you could be aggressive. So ignoring somebody very often is a way of not reinforcing. But the one that's really difficult is when you laugh at them. When you laugh, in a way, it says, this is not okay, only okay, but this is desired. So this happens a great deal. Now, being ignored, if you want to know, I had a good friend, Marty, who was telling me the other day about what it was like in an emergency room. And she said she was in an emergency room where she was ignored for 9 hours. Now, what's that like? Emergency rooms, hospitals. I've been in them with friends. You're in an emergency room, and for 9 hours, you could be ignored. How does that happen? Well, here's the way it happens. Emergency room means somebody may die. So people come in, and you got a dozen people there on a typical Saturday morning, 20 people in the emergency room, and they're all, one's got a broken wrist, one's got a broken elbow, one's crying, one's this, one's that. The doctors have to scan the room for who may die. Their job is to pay attention to the ones who may be in danger of not being alive and to not pay attention to the ones who won't be in danger. So you could wait 9 hours in an emergency room because you're not in critical danger. It's fair. It doesn't feel fair when you're being ignored. Let's say you're in pain. Let's say you have a migraine and you're screaming in agony. Right? And it hurts so much. The doctor knows you're not going to blow a gut. He knows you're not going to get a hemorrhage. Or she knows. So they ignore you. Say you have a raging infection. Right? They put you in isolation. They ignore you. They leave you alone because they have to take care of the other stuff. And they'll get to you in due time. But they get to you only when the critical people are out. Now, that's a kind of time when you get ignored, where it's almost right to get ignored. You go to an emergency room with something less than dying or that needs immediate attention, bring a book. Bring a book. You're going to be there for a while. Be understanding of the people around you. But also go with somebody who knows how to get something done. You know, if you have somebody with you in an emergency room, they'll at least get you some attention at some point if they stay out there for you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going to talk to you about being ignored and what it's like for you to be ignored. And, well, you know, there's another thing. Did you ever get so crazy that I have. I've gotten angry. I've gotten, just unbearable at times. I've been that way in my life. And I remember times when I would be unbearable, and I was aware of being unbearable, but I didn't want to own up to it. So now I'm being unbearable, and I hope that people aren't paying attention to me. I hope I'm being ignored. In fact, it's a gift that you ignore me. It's like complaining about illness. You know, you wake up if you're a complainer or if you're scared, if you're a person who's frightened. You wake up in the morning and you're frightened. And you say, I'm nervous about this. Oh, I don't know if my sister, my uncle, my mother. And you're just worried and worried and worried. And your husband or your wife, they ignore you. It'll calm down. It'll calm down. They're just being a little crazy. So there are times that being ignored is a good thing. Is it ignored? Or would it be better if the person walked over to you and said, you know, I see you got a lot on your mind. And I see you're very upset. And I want you to know that I love you. But I'm not going to pay very much attention to this right now. Which would you prefer? Needing to be noticed is a definite sign of feeling insignificant. When a person walks by and they're wearing, I saw somebody wearing such outrageous clothing the other day. I saw a man who was tattooed. He had his shirt open to his belly button. He was just look at me. Just look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me kind of guy. If you got to put that much effort into being noticed, you must be somewhat insignificant. There are people I know who do provocative and evocative clothing. Sometimes I wonder about implants, too. I wonder about specifically breast implants. What are they about? What are they about? Are they about, I'm tired of being not noticed, and I want to be noticed in the way that the other women are noticed who have got big breasts, therefore I'm going to have these implants, and therefore you're going to notice me? And if you notice me just for that, and then I unveil my charming personality behind it, maybe you'll like me. Maybe it's a way of getting your attention. How do you get the attention of somebody who doesn't want to pay attention to you? You know, what if you're working at a job, and you're at a job, and you have somebody there, you have a boss who you want to notice you? How do you get it done? How do you do it? Is it the way you dress? Is it the way you address them? Is it some special project you do? If you work for a large corporation, very often the only way you're ever going to get ahead is if you get noticed by somebody. So the idea of this today is what it's been for you. As a child, being ignored is one of the worst things that could happen to you. As a child, needing to have a parent's attention and not being able to get it is terrible. A lot of people I know come from large families, families large enough like 6, 7 children, 8 children, 9 children. And each child, as the number increases, becomes less significant because they become a group. You know, it becomes like your group of children. In a case where there are 9 children, if one child dies, the parents get over it faster than if you've got 3 children. They do, because each child is less significant, and you know it. You're one of a group. I've met so many people who are one of, like, a large group of people who expect nothing. They expect nothing because there was never any room for anything as a child. They were one of 9 children. Their parents had no room for them whatsoever. So they felt insignificant, and they live insignificant lives. And they don't expect to become significant. They don't expect to get noticed. Do you expect to get noticed? Do you hear some interesting things? People who don't mind being ignored very often have cats. People who want to not be ignored have dogs. That's a nice distinction, don't you think? Give me a dog who's not going to, when I walk in the door, he's going to think I'm the end of the world and I'm probably bringing home the buffalo that I shot for him. You know, that's what my dog's going to think. My dog's going to think I'm the best thing that ever lived. My cat's going to look at me and look away. Maybe if you like being ignored and you don't mind it at all, cat's not such a bad choice. But if you want to have some fun, you get a puppy. If you feel unimportant, get a dog. You know, you'll be important to something. It's important to feel important to people. It's important to feel like you're a contribution. You don't have to be really so special. That's why I think volunteer services are so good. I think having volunteer services is a wonderful thing, or doing volunteer services is a wonderful thing, because in a way, you're important without anybody knowing you're important. The things you do that people don't thank you for make you feel whole on the inside. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're with you today, and we're with you tomorrow, and we're going to be taking your telephone calls today. The telephone number is 212-209-2900. Here's a poem from a young girl, 16 years old, she wrote. She was visiting her mother coming down from school, where she was at school. She said, you talk to me as if I don't understand. You look at me as if I don't know anything. I'm beginning to think that you're hiding something from me, but I'm your child. I don't like secrets, but I have some too. I think you should know what my secrets are, but do you care? I don't like being here. I wish I could go. Being away from you, being away from you. You do little for me. You're never there when I need you the most. I've got to wait till you're done with your job. Then you answer my call when it's too late, when I no longer need you or want you. Please answer my call when I want you. Don't ignore me. I hurt with pain and unhappiness. Because I can't understand why I, your own child, the most important person in your life right now, more important than your friends, more important than your bills, more important than those boyfriends and siblings, I, your own child, you ignore. Like I don't matter anymore. Like I came here for fun. But the truth is, I came here because I care about you. But I must go because my feelings and wants have taken over. I can't be ignored anymore. I can't be unknown by my own mother. I can't. I don't want any more secrets hidden from me. I want the truth to be told. But until then, I'll come and stay when I think I'm ready. But if I know I need you to pay attention to me, and I know I'm in a place where I have that need, I'll stay away. 16-year-old girl wrote that. So this is Armando Miller with you with a positive mind. You know, just one last aspect of this before we take your calls. I'll play a little music, then we'll take your calls today about being ignored. I want to hear that at 212-209-2900 and ignoring people. There are people you ignore, of course, you know, because they're being abusive to you or abrasive. And if you can't face them down and you can't challenge them, you ignore them. Worst thing you could do is laugh at them. Because that laughter in some way encourages them. But you know, a funny thing happened with cell phones. Cell phones and text messages have now given people the right and the ability to ignore people. Email. Somebody sends, I must get about 200 to 300 emails a day. A lot of them are spam. None of them, if they're ever one of the callers or, you know, from people from WBAI, I always respond to them. But we have learned on our cell phones, on our little smartphones, to ignore people. Let's say your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife is calling you and you're angry at them. You diss them. You diss them by just ignoring the call. You don't answer the phone. This is a new phenomenon. You could actually tell by the way, I have a friend who said she could tell by the way the phone rings, whether or not a person is shutting them off. You know, like, you know, if you call somebody and the phone begins to ring and then suddenly it only goes one ring and then it goes to voicemail, it means they looked at their phone and they decided to not take your call. And you know it. Shush. So this modern technology has kind of taken us to a point where it's becoming more and more obvious that there are people who don't want to know you, don't want to speak to you, and that you have people who ignore you and you ignore. It's kind of an interesting change in our society. As I said, 212-209-2900, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, some music that I think is related to this subject. And then we'll take your phone calls. This is Armand DeMille. Be right back.
If someone stood up in a crowd and raised his voice up way out loud and waved his arm and shook his leg, you'd notice him. If someone in the movie show yelled, "Fire in the second row! This whole place is a powder keg!" you'd notice them. And even without clucking like a hen, everyone gets noticed now and then. Unless, of course, that personage should be invisible, inconsequential. Me. Mr. Cellophane, should have been my name, Mr. Cellophane, 'cause you can look right through me right by me and never know I'm there. I tell you, cellophane, Mr. Cellophane, should I bend my name, Mr. Cellophane, 'cause you can look right through me, walk right by me and never know. Suppose you was a little cat residing in a person's flat who fed you fish and scratched your ears. You'd notice 'em. Suppose you was a woman wed, been sleeping in a double bed beside one man for 7 years. You'd notice him. A human being's made of more than air. With all that bulk, you're bound to see him there. Unless that human being next to you is unimpressive, undistinguished, you know who. Should I bend my name, Mr. Cellophane, 'cause you can look right through me, walk right by me, and never know I'm there. I tell you, cellophane, Mr. Cellophane, should I bend my name, Mr. Cellophane, 'cause you can look right through me, walk right by me, and never know I'm there, never even know I'm there. I hope I haven't taken up too much of your time.
Whew. John C. Reilly, fabulous performance he did in Chicago. Mr. Cellophane. Do you ever feel that way? Mr. Cellophane, Miss Cellophane, ignored? Or is that the way you make people feel? You know, invisible. And just, they don't exist. You don't exist. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind and WBAI. We're going to take your calls related to this issue of ignoring and being ignored and what it means to you. And what you're going to do is you're going to tell me about things and I'm going to personalize it. So if you call in, just expect. I'm going to ask you to fess up, but always in a kind way. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Sue.
Hello, Sue.
Hi. I thought to call when you talked about the being ignored for 9 hours in the ER.
Yep.
On Thursday, I was actually at my physical therapist at the hospital to work on my shoulder. And while I was there, I was fine, and I took one step to go in for the physical therapy, and I couldn't walk on my right foot. The pain was excruciating. The therapist took me in and, you know, gave me this new piece of equipment, and it was the first actual time when we were meeting after the evaluation, you know, to do some work together. So she puts me on the bike. I said, oh, do I have to use my feet? And she said, no, it's a hand bike. Okay. So she gave me just no instruction. She was working with somebody else, and she left me there. And I was feeling very frightened and in pain with my foot and not knowing how to use the equipment and totally ignoring me. And I kept looking over at her, and she's working with the other person. And I felt like crying. I felt like, you know, I'm going to leave. And I said, no, you're here. Do what you got to do. And
well, who said that? You said, I'm going to leave. Who did you say? You said it
myself.
To yourself.
I was thinking, yeah.
Okay.
You know, like
gotcha.
Going through all kinds of emotions. And finally, she came back, and she knew that my foot was hurting. She never said a word the entire time. And I told her when she came back, I said, you know, I needed more instruction. This is the first time I'm using this piece of equipment, which she knew, and I needed more instruction. And I asked her one question, and she said, oh, you know, I'm sorry. So, okay, fine. So I communicated rather than, you know, did something rash. And then we went in, and she was pretty good. Never once asked about, you know, my foot. Nothing, not one word. At the end, I asked her for some ice for my ankle, my foot, and she obliged. And that was it, and she left. So I said, okay, they don't care. You know, I just have to leave. And I didn't speak to the manager. I didn't do anything on my own behalf, which I think now I probably should have done, because I walked across the street, still within the hospital complex. It got much worse. I went into the lobby in that building, sat down, talked to somebody who, you know, I said, I'm trying to find a way home without, you know, trying to use a public transportation with that has elevators so I don't have to walk. And it's rush hour. I was afraid I'd get pushed over. I was really frightened, but whatever. So and then we tried to get Accessoride, and hung up on me.
So you were having a really bad day, Sue. Let me ask you something about this. This has got history. This has got history in your life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I could hear it. This isn't just the first time this has happened. You know, this has got history. This has happened with your family, too.
For sure.
Tell me about it. Tell me, let's go directly to the source.
Okay. So I always felt that I was on my own. I was shut out. I was put down. When I did good things, I don't know that I did anything really so awful, but I was always, and I was daddy's little girl. So
there we go.
And it
happens right there.
Right.
Daddy's little girl gets hated by everybody else. And daddy doesn't know this, but daddy's doing the biggest crime by having a little girl.
But daddy needed to get separation from mommy.
Yeah.
Yeah. She, you know, he,
so he used
he
you
used
in the
me
middle.
As a refuge. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I realize that now, and I doubt that he ever loved me, but I have to believe that he did, because otherwise it would be just too sad. But I just wanted to say...
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, let's back that up a little.
All right. I wanted to tell you the good part.
Don't take my daddy away from me, please.
No, but I wanted to tell you the good part.
Let me finish for a minute.
No, please, yeah.
Sure, you don't want to take it away. Sure, you loved your father. Sure, your father loved you. But they set up a world. And in this world, they created a form of feeling in you where you became a very emotional person. And you had all this resentment all around you at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so everybody marginalized you. Everybody put you at a distance. And you're very sensitive to that. You're even sensitive to it with me, I hear you. You know, and you think... that you go into a situation, you would think you wouldn't carry that with you, but there's a piece of you expecting this to happen all the time.
Yeah.
And by expecting it to happen, strangely enough, it creates it in a very unusual way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in doctor's offices specifically, in medical offices or phys ed offices, you have these rooms that they put people in, you know, you take that room, you take that room, you take that room, so they could isolate people from each other. That's why they don't have everybody in the waiting room. They have six rooms, and they want to isolate you. They don't want you to talk to the next person.
Why?
Because they're afraid you're going to gang up on the doctor.
Uh-huh.
So they separate you, and they say, now you stay in that room until the doctor gets to you. Don't come out. And then the next person put them in a room. That's why they have six rooms, because mm-hmm. the doctor can't treat all six at once. So they separate you so that you guys don't compare notes.
Mm-hmm.
Because mainly what we're going to do is put you in a room, and we're not going to get to you for another 25 minutes. And you're not going to be told that we're not going to get to you for 25 mm-hmm. minutes. We're going to tell you the doctor will be right with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the medical system. There's another part to this medical system which has to do with Medicaid, Medicare, and all the insurance policies that and what they'll pay and what they won't pay. And the doctors figure they got to double up. Now, therapists like me and the people who I work with, we don't double up because we can't. We can't have two appointments at the same time. I can't have you in one room and another person in the other room. Imagine being a shrink and doing this, running in and talking to one, then saying, excuse me, and then going in and talking to the next one. Excuse me, and then going off and talking to the next one. You know, it would be a very interesting form of therapy. You are going to make peace with this because, yes, your father loved you. Yes, your father had needs. But you, then they're not going to treat you like he did.
Well, I have allowed it to continue because I never felt that I really deserved anything.
Sure.
I was afraid if I expressed my needs that I would be punished more.
But by whom? By whom? Keep in mind, it's always going to be by mommy.
Oh,
so
by
the
my
person
mother.
Always punishing you, and in this case with your physical therapist, it was a woman too, is always going to be a mommy who wants to punish you.
Yeah, but I like women very much, except when they have the same build, like very, like the shape where, you know, they're very buxom and then have very skinny piano legs.
Just like who?
Like my mother.
Oh.
Yeah. So those are the women that I find are really harsh and aggressive. I've really noticed that, and it's just only...
No, it's not them. I'll tell you what it is. I understand what you're saying. What you're describing very often, if somebody is thin and has a fairly sizable bosom, they usually are going to be seen as people who are ready to give. See, and they're usually giving people. And although this is a great generalization, what you're seeing is you're seeing this echo of something that you once saw as very harmful to you.
But my mother was never thin. She was like top heavy stomach and very ample bosom and very skinny. But that particular body type, I've noticed. And I don't go in noticing it, but after I say, oh, that's the same thing. But can I just tell you how I overcame?
Yes.
Because that's the part, that's the good side of this. So I'm trying very much to get, you know, to really esteem myself now. I'm really working on that. And when I left that hospital, and there were several people that tried to help me, I walked, and it's on kind of an inclined hill. I walked, and they were doing scaffolding, so I held on, and I used the scaffolding to hold on to, and I ran out of scaffolding. And then I stood there, and I wanted to cry because I saw everybody going home from the hospital with somebody, either in a taxi or a private car, and there I am all alone, nobody to call, and I feel like crying right now. I have nobody to count on. So what I did, I hobbled over and I stood against the side of the building and I said, no, I'm not going to cry. I'm going to leave myself open because God is going to help me. God always helps me and I'm just going to wait for that person. They're going to come along. A minute, maybe 2 minutes later, a woman walks up and she said, oh, are you okay? I said, no, not really. She said, you know, you're going far. What do you need? I said, I need a stick. In my mind, I thought cane, but I dare not ask for a cane because, you know, I'm not deserving of good things. So in my mind, I heard myself do this. I said, stick. She said, oh, okay, stand right here. She said, I'm not just any person asking. She said, I am a physical therapist who works at blah, blah hospital where I just came from. Stay right here. I'll be back. She comes back with a brand new cane. And she gives it to me, and then I asked her name. It turns out, I said, oh, are you the one who teaches such and such a program, which I had just found out about for osteopenia? It's an exercise class. And she said, yes, she's this one and the same, the teacher. That's her program. Oh, there are no accidents. So from there, it progressed where she said, what would you do? I couldn't walk. I nearly lost my balance and fell over, even with the stick, the cane. And she got me. She said, I'd go to the ER. So she arranged. I got a wheelchair, and they took me in. And I was in the ER till 5 o'clock in the morning. This was 7:30 at night.
Okay, but Sue,
anyway,
I do have a few other people on the line.
But anyway, it worked out. It worked out great. It worked out where I took care of myself. And then I helped other people. I ganged up on the doctors in the ER. Not really, but we definitely exchanged information. So
you're quite a person. You're quite a person. Certainly, I will remember you forever.
I'm the singer. You never forgot me.
I never forgot you.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Speak to you again soon.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armando Mills. She brings up a lot of issues. But there is that tricky issue of the daddy's little girl and mommy's little boy. It always seems to creep in there somewhere. Sounds like good news to be the favorite, doesn't it? God's costs. It has costs. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi.
Hello, Armand. This is Herb. Yeah, how you doing?
Good, Herb. Good.
I'm sorry, but they're banging down a wall in the next apartment.
That's perfectly fine.
I'm locked up in the bathroom. I'm working on myself. I'm 78 years old. I have a dog. A wonderful dog. My wife is out in Central Park with the dog now after we had a little spat because I didn't think I was getting enough attention. I'm passive aggressive, and I really love my mother. My mother loved me. I had no father that I know of. And I've talked to you before about this. But,
I've spoken to you. Yes, I remember.
My wicked stepfather, the way he treated me was like I wasn't even around. He completely ignored me, and that used to anger me to no end. So when I get that way, even by my wife, you know, I go up the wall, you know. So it's not as bad as it used to be, and the way I can really take a lot of the hurt out of this is to keep the focus on myself. Never mind how many other people are called at a doctor's office, you know. Is it reasonable? Have I been there more than a half hour? And I'll get up and complain, but I got to know how to complain. A polite way of, so look, I've been waiting here 35 minutes. What am I going to be called? Do you know?
Tough, isn't it? So you have to kind of catch, unfortunately, I mean, there you are with some 22-year-old behind a desk who is determining whether or not you're going to get attention by however she conveys. She conveys the message to the physician who's there, and there's an office manager in back of her who's teaching her how to ignore customer complaints. It's a lousy system, Herb. It's a lousy system. So I'm not sure exactly what to do. The one thing I know for sure is when they sense complaint in an older person, they just, you know, they say, all right, they close the ears. So maybe you've got to bring flowers. And I'm saying this seriously because it's what I've noticed somebody do in an office. You go to a doctor's office, bring some flowers, and you bring them for the people who are attending there.
Uh-huh.
Or bring something for them. Bring them something to eat. Bring something for the desk. And say, here's for you guys because I know it's difficult. Or here, I know it's cold out today. Or I know it's warm out today. Here's something that you could have on your desk. And then every time they pass those flowers, they say, who are they from? They're from Herb. You know what I mean? Another way of doing it, Herb. You might have to pay an extra $5, but it may be worth it.
Okay. I got a short little thing I'd love to read. We came across this thing. This is Goethe.
Sure.
And this came from a big book with my wife and I were kindergarten.
Is it going to take more than a minute, Herb? Because I got about a dozen people waiting. Go ahead.
Here we go. .. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy. The chance to draw back, always an effective. This concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid ends, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from that decision, rising in one's favor. All means of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt, would have come to play. I have learned a deep respect for one of Goethe's couplets.
Whatever
you can do, or dream you could begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Thank you.
Herb, thank you so much. Thank you. That's certainly one of Goethe's most profound pieces. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're a fine man. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Herb gets himself noticed. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, wow, cool.
Cool.
Okay, well, first I have to go to the restroom because I'm at work and close the door. Okay, so can you hear me?
Thanks for that information, yes.
Okay, so yes, good subject. I'm both characters. I hate to be ignored, and when it happens, I ignore the person. Like, for example, my wife and I go through a big problem in our relationship. And the problem is, like, part of it is like this, because we go to, like, galas, we go to different events, and she ignores me. So I'm there, and I'm standing around, and usually like a Latino gala, and everybody speaks Spanish, and I don't speak that well. So I'm sitting there by myself, and she's off, and it makes me upset. So I get upset, and then I ignore her, and then she gets upset, and it's this constant battle. So,
you know, the thing that's missing, what's your name?
Christopher,
the thing that's missing is your communication with your wife before you go there. Because one of the things that happen at these gatherings is you feel inadequate, you feel out of place, and you need her to stick with you. So, I mean, it's an easy beginning agreement. Listen, when we first walk in, will you stay with me for 10 minutes before you leave my arm?
Mm-hmm.
You know, asking for that may not be such a big deal.
Yeah, well, we tried that. She's just really, she's busy, she doesn't have, you know, she needs to go, she needs to talk to people. I just kind of wish that she would acknowledge that I'm still there.
Well, maybe this is not the place for you to go, you know?
Yeah,
Chris,
so
if you can't get what you want, maybe it's not a place to go. Maybe it's not something you should do. But I do think if your mate is ignoring you at a gathering, that there's something wrong. Because the gathering, when a couple goes together, is the couple. You're not two individuals who are going and you split off and you separate from each other. You know, it's not that. That's not the idea.
Yeah, no.
It's not a mixer, you know. It's like we're not coming here to meet other people. We're here as a couple.
Yes, but I guess she feels like she needs to get, you know, I guess in the theater, she needs to get people to sponsor her.
Sure, I understand.
Like networking and stuff like that. But I feel like, you know, like if I go to, like I work in ophthalmology, and if I go to a conference or something like that and she's with me, I feel like, you know, I always keep her in sight or acknowledge, or even if I look over and see how she's doing.
Sure.
You know.
Look at all those ophthalmological references you just made. You keep her in sight. You look over. Right? It's really amazing.
Yeah.
That's your perception of life.
Yes.
See, I said perception.
So that's one of the issues. And then she gets mad at me because I'm good at ignoring. I can ignore for days.
What is her name?
Margarita.
Do you love Margarita?
Yes, I do.
Does Margarita know that you love her?
We've been going through volatile relationships.
What's the last thing that you've done for her that she hasn't expected you to do that was an act of generosity or graciousness? You know?
I don't know.
Something.
I don't know.
Think about it, because it may be time. It may be time to do something just unexpected and beautiful, and maybe you could bring Marguerite back to the fold.
Mm. Okay.
I got to get going, Christopher. Thanks for talking. I'll be seeing you. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM. If you're curious, this is the music from Schindler's List.